You know, we really should have started a petition after the first round of the playoffs, because once the Kings-Warriors series was over, I feel like the playoffs have become infinitely less interesting. Is that just me? Josh, you know, for those of you listening, we have a guest here today. Josh Carson has been a frequent guest on the show. If you listen to the show, you'll know who it is. But I got to say, Josh, like, before we even dive in, the majority of this episode is going to be about everything that, you know, the second round, the playoffs as a whole. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the Sacramento Kings. But, you know, as this is our first show since Game 7, so Sam and I really haven't gotten a chance to talk about it at all. Want to talk about it with you a little bit. Being that the Warriors have kind of, you know, you associate yourself with the Warriors, Steph, all that. Can you just give a little recap of what you thought of the Warriors-King series in totality?
Well, first of all, very glad to be here today, and we have a lot to say today. Isn't that right, Sam? Isn't that right? But anyway, I mean, yeah, if you want a quick recap on that series.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a series that drew the national attention like no first-round series before in history, drawing record viewers. Game 4, which aired on ABC, and so all the local channels get that. That was at Golden State for Game 4 was a record, and then Game 7 was also on a Sunday afternoon, set a record.
Really surprised there. You had a clash of a guy
on a historic team going for his fifth ring, and trying to keep the dynasty alive, you know, all those storylines there. Always a team trying to uproot one of these dynastic franchises in Golden State is that one right now. And then you have the up-and-coming team in Sacramento, and Fox just playing out of his mind, even despite the injury to his finger, still playing extremely well in his first playoff series. This team, a lot of energy behind him, put the Warriors down 2-0. For the first time, I believe, in a series in their existence under Kerr here. So there was just so many storylines. One, and it was a really terrific series. I think the league, there's this meme with Adam Silver holding the phone, basically, and people quote that meme and say, hey, make it go seven. And they had this series with that meme all over it. So I think from a basketball fan perspective, obviously, if you're a Kings fan, maybe you're a bit disappointed, which – I mean, I wouldn't be if I were you. Nobody expected this team to be third seed, let alone take the defending champions in one of these teams that are dynasty in Golden State. So I think that from the league's perspective, and even from a Kings fan perspective, you got basically everything you could ask for out of a series like this. And it took a guy who's an all-time great having 50 in a game seven to beat you. So There's definitely a positive outlook that you can take on it, though it's not going to go in the win column this year. Man, it was a great series, and I know you mentioned briefly here at the beginning, Jason, that you feel like, you know, from a Kings fan perspective, the playoffs are a little bit less interesting. But going forward here in the third round, or the second round, I really think that we could have potential of 3-7 game series on our hands here. So of the four that are going, so it still carries some intrigue, but no, Kings have nothing to hang their heads about, man. They played well, and nobody expected anything that they did this year to the extent that they did it at. So
yeah, no, that was just more me being bitter about the whole thing more than anything else. Sam, like I mentioned at the top of the show, you and I, this is our first show back since Game 7. You know, we never really got a chance to talk about it. Don't want to spend, like, at all a ton of time on the Kings, but just a quick, you know, thought on Game 7 in the series.
Yeah, I think it's the best. First off, Josh, thank you for coming on. It's been a while since I was on the podcast that you've been on as well. So it's awesome to hear you. Did a great job that last podcast. So it's awesome. It's like having our hero here, really. Jason, I'm getting kind of giddy. And so for the Kings, right, to just round up their season, I think I hate the Warriors more now based off of how that series ended and watching them night in and night out. I think Draymond's antics are just unbelievable. The dude should have about 30 technicals a season if he was actually being officiated the same way other players were officiated. There's just no way he'd be ejected every single game. It's out of this world. And the amount of love that Steph Curry gets, right? He's this babyface assassin, but now he actually has a beard, so I guess he can't be the babyface assassin anymore. He's a villain. Like, there is no way, if you are not a fan of Golden State, how do you cheer for the guy? Because he is such a troll in the antics that he has. The amount of it's confidence, but then it's also cockiness. And the whole going after the Kings fans and mocking the light, the beam. I mean, this is the one good thing Kings fans have had in 20 years. And you're going to take that away from them and mock them in Sacramento when you're up by 30. And you're light, you're just absolutely destroying the team. That is, it's villain behavior.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to say. I mean, everything aside, right, I'm definitely rooting for the Lakers. And Josh, you know the prime reason why. There's a certain number six that I'm rooting for that needs to get number five to get to closer to Michael Jordan. And but the Kings in the awards, I mean, it's going to be the biggest part, right? Executive of the Year, they locked up with Monty McNair, and that's major. He deserves that.
Yeah.
And then some. Mike Brown gets Coach of the Year. De'Aaron Fox gets Clutch Player of the Year. De'Aaron Fox might be a second team All-NBA. Sabonis will be a lock for All-NBA. I mean, this team, Keegan Murray, all first team, rookie first team.
Yep.
This team has definitely been shown the recognition of a great season that they had. And I'm just looking forward to next year to hopefully they build from it.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned the light the beam thing from Steph after the game. And while as a Kings fan, I was sitting there and I was like, oh man, that really hurt. But as an NBA fan, I actually loved that. And here's the thing. The Kings bring that on themselves, right? You have this beam that's now associated with your team. And there have been numerous times throughout the season where you had Kings fans in other people's arenas and other teams' arenas chanting light the beam. So I think, truthfully, it's fair game for other players to sort of mock that a little bit. It only hurt me from the standpoint of, oh gosh, like, man, he got us. Like, this is game seven and they absolutely got us. But from that standpoint, I looked at it as, you know, as soon as we got the beam, it was like, okay, well, this is going to come back at us on, you know, when we lose, especially if we lose big for whatever reason, like it's that'll happen. So that actually didn't bother me all that much. And from, I always typically, you know, in movies and, you know, even in sports sometimes, as long as at least if I'm specifically talking about sports, as long as it doesn't cross a line into like, well, I guess Draymond stomping on somebody's chest, then little stuff like that. I love that stuff. That's what makes sports fun for me. I just echo everything that both of you said. Like, it was a great season, and Josh, I agree. Sam and I had both said going into this series that if it goes seven and the Kings play well all the way throughout the series, and even if they didn't win, then as a Kings fan, getting the third seed, taking them seven games, playing well, getting the recognition is really all you could ask for as a Kings fan. Like, we had people ask us what we were expecting of the team before the playoffs started, and we were both like, I don't know, we're just kind of happy to be here. Like, we'll see what happens. Like, next year was the year I think people were circling as, okay, the year to maybe do something. This year was just like a, okay, well, let's see what happens. And what ended up happening was a lot of fun. I mean, being at game one was something I'll never forget. So, again, I don't want to spend too much time on the Sacramento Kings because obviously that series is long gone. We're four games into pretty much every series except for the Warriors and Lakers one and the Heat next one. So, if you guys don't mind, I want to transition us into the second round. And, Josh, the first series that I would like to start with is going to be one that is probably closer to home for you. At least I remember when I first met you, one of the teams that I know you liked was the Celtics when we first met. So I want to start with the Celtics. And the main question that I have for you is coming into this series, I was under the impression, just based off what I had seen, that the Celtics were definitely, like, no question, better than the 76ers. And yet right now we find ourselves locked up 2-2, despite that Joel Embiid injury. So my question more for you is, has this series more been about the Celtics' inability to kind of put away the 76ers and be the team that they're supposed to be, or a James Harden resurrection, if you will?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, and I think it's a little bit of both. It's an extension of what we saw in the last round from them. You know, Philly made light work of Brooklyn, right? They swept him away. And I think, you know, Embiid, he tweaked his knee in game 3. He didn't play in game 4 of that series. And, you know, he wouldn't have been able to go any sooner than he did, obviously, missing game 1 of this series. So I think that was critical for them to get that first round series out of the way. Plus, considering some of the late game 6, game 7 playoff flameouts that we've seen in the past from Harden playing heavy minutes, I think it was critical for him to get rest as well. They had like 10 days of rest. Yeah. And part of that as well was due to Boston not being able to close out Atlanta. And after those first two games, that looked like that really wasn't a series. I jokingly said to a number of people, I think the playoffs are in full swing, except, that Philly, Brooklyn, and Boston Atlanta series, I don't really consider those playoff series. But then the Hawks made it a series, right? Mm-hmm. And, a lot of that has to do with the heroics of Trae Young, but also a lot of it, too, is just Boston messing around, not really taking care of business like they did last season, sweeping away the Nets, a lot more decisive victories that they had before they played 2-7 game series before the finals. So, part of it is Boston. There's something that is just a little bit off with them this year. They had a commitment to defense last year that I don't think is the same with Coach Udoka versus forgetting the name of their coach now.
Mazzulla. Joe Mazzulla.
Mazzulla. Yeah. So the focus has been more on the offensive end when defensively they can't allow James Harden to go off for 40 points in these multiple games that he has. Part of it, the credit goes to him as well, Harden, that is. He's such an unpredictable player. I don't know what to expect from him next game. He might go 10 on 3 of 13 again. Who knows? I mean, he's so unpredictable. But he is the key for them. One of the projects that I worked on before the postseason was talking about Philly, and this is on YouTube, that is, and I just made a statement that I think a lot of us already know. It's that Harden is the key to that team. We know that Embiid's the best player, and they go as Embiid goes, right? But Harden is going to be the ultimate X factor for that team. If he shows up, and I wasn't even saying he needs to show up and drop 40 like he has been. I'm just saying show up and drop 25 and 12, closer to the numbers he was putting up this season. And I think they would have a chance, a legitimate chance, because there's a decent unit around him. But the performances that he's had, for as much as people have bashed on him, I think he deserves the credit for what he's done in the two games. Game 1, really nobody expected them to win that one. He goes in there with a 45 and he gets it done. And then yesterday, with all the momentum against them at the end of that game, every reason for Philly to go down 3-1, he makes the tying floater and the game-winning 3 in overtime. So, I mean, you got to give him credit. Now it's the best of 3. I really don't know what to expect. Personally, I mean, I'm really good with either team going. I would kind of like to see Philly pull it off, just because Harden is older and he's trying to get that first ring. And I think Boston's got a lot of young guys that'll be there for a long time. It's crazy to me to think that Jason Tatum's only 25 years old doing what he's doing. But we'll see. I mean, the advantage obviously to Boston is that they have 2 of these next 3 potentially, should they need to play all those games at home. It just seems more and more like if you're the team to win it, you'll win it. Doesn't matter your home or road. Obviously saw what Golden State did in the first round and what Miami did with Milwaukee in that first round, taking multiple games on the road. So, we'll just see what happens. But there's a huge question mark there. Is Boston committing to defense? Are they going to commit to lock down Harden? I mean, I think they've did what they did well in those two games, that they held them to like 28 points combined games 2 and 3. And then, we'll see what the response is from Harden. We're not expecting a 40 every night, but he may have to, at least go for more than 10 on 3 of 12 or whatever night that he can have. Right. So.
Yeah. Sam, what are your thoughts so far on that Sixers Celtics series being tied 2-2?
Yeah, I really don't think you can expect more from Harden. I think he's already given Sixers fans and probably Sixers coaching staff, Sixers players, really what they needed. He won them two games in this series, and I think it's now time for – and, you know, Joel's played well the last two games coming off an injury, so we really don't know his health status, what sort of percentage he is. But he really needs to, I think, kind of take over a game and go for 40 with 15-plus rebounds type of night. Because really, I think if Harden were to go and average 15 points in the next three games, I don't think you can be mad, because he's already over-delivered for them in these first four. He's given you a really good game one and a really good game four, and kind of, unfortunately, kind of to his sort of playoff history, games two and three were kind of what you expect from James Harden. So if you're sitting there and expecting him to go for 40 or 30, I don't think that's realistic.
Okay, well then let's contrast that with another player who goes up and down game to game. Because I think if you're going to say that about James Harden, do you have the same sort of expectation for Anthony Davis? Because the duality of Anthony Davis is a real thing. The every other game thing is just really, really weird and interesting. You know, going for 40 and then going for 10 and then going for 30 and then going for like 9. So if we're going to say that James Harden has over-delivered because in those two games he's given you 40 points, does Anthony Davis get the same sort of treatment? And Sam, I'll send that back to you first.
No, and Josh, I'm really interested to hear what you say about this one. Because I think hearing pretty much every NBA mind or any NBA analyst, I think everyone has an opinion on what's going on with Anthony Davis, where he's playing really well and is the driving force for the Lakers one game and then completely disappears the next game. Or disappears the next game, and it just doesn't make any sense. Really, no one can put their finger on it. I think for him, if we're going to compare this to James Harden, I think Harden's definitely in a different, way later stage of his career, and injuries seem to have caught up to him. And I think there's, in games where he struggles, there's an inability for him to break down defenses like he used to in Houston and even at times in Brooklyn. But Anthony Davis is in the prime of his career. Injuries are not, I don't think, a factor right now.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, he's always on the ground. You really don't know. But it's interesting. It just seems like a lack of intensity, lack of focus, lack of desire to really put in that effort, because the skill is there. I think, who did I hear it from? I think it was Tim Legler on the JJ Redick podcast. It's the Lakers, if Anthony Davis is playing well, have a mismatch against any team they're going to play. And you can put them against the Nuggets. I think Anthony Davis has an advantage against Jokic, especially on his offensive end. I don't think Jokic can stick with Anthony Davis. You can say the same with Joel Embiid. There's been times in the past where Anthony Davis has given it to Joel Embiid on the offensive end. But why is that not a nightly thing?
Mm-hmm. Josh, what are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, I think Sam hit a good point there, and it's just the intensity that he's playing with. And you know, first of all, contrary to a lot of popular belief, you know, people have tend to embellish or made a headline in saying that James Harden is severely worse than he is. I'm not saying any of you guys did this, but this just tends to be a headline, like he's severely worse in the playoffs than he is in the regular season. Having done the research for the project that I did, I actually found that not to be true. Now, his numbers, you know, they don't directly mirror what he does in the regular season. He's a few points under, maybe just like an assist or two under, but we also have to keep in mind that for a couple of seasons there, he was averaging like 35 points a game, which is insane. Mm-hmm. And so do you expect that? I know Shaq says a lot on NBA TNT, like when you're in the playoffs, you got to raise your points per game average by 5 to 10, right? That's a popular point that he makes. But literally, like, no one this postseason has done that besides Devin Booker, who we could talk about later.
Jimmy Butler
as well. That's right. Those two guys. very high. I'd say Fox on both of them. Yeah. But just the continued be able to elevate their game, their points per game total over the course of the playoffs as they've done. But again, those guys also a little bit younger than Harden as well. But I think, you know, if it's going to be expected of Harden to deliver, and maybe not with a 40-point game, but with a 20-12, you know, he can't have the games where he's only attempts 13 shots, only makes 3 field goals, you know, scores 13 points. Well, if we're going to expect Harden to get 20-25 and just come out and be aggressive, right, at least take 15 to 20 shots, take 25 shots should the game come to you that way. Well, we should expect the same of Anthony Davis, especially for a player younger and in the prime of his career, as you mentioned. I know LeBron's on that team, but he's not at the point of his career where he's going to post the numbers that he did, say, in the 2018 finals, or that run that he had against Golden State there, where he was option 1A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and every single letter in the alphabet. So he's not looking to do that anymore. He's obviously spreading the rock around a little bit. I don't have the direct number in front of me, but I'm not sure if LeBron has a 30-point playoff game this year. But again, he's not forcing the issue. He's leaving it open to the other guys to attack. I think D'Angelo Russell has done that great at times. We've seen other players step in, like a Hachimura in the first round and Austin Reeves. But, you know, Anthony Davis is at this point, should be the best player on that team, considering the point that he's at in his career and his age and just his size advantage, mismatch, especially against a smaller Warriors team. And the fact that that guy has not had back-to-back 20-plus point games this postseason is alarming. There's no reason why he shouldn't be able to do that, but I think it just starts with a mindset and being aggressive. There's a huge change in a player's attitude toward the game. If they're going out there and they're looking for their shot early, the two games that James Harden had the 40-plus points in, he was very aggressive from the start versus the other games looked like he was second-guessing himself. Well, if Davis can take that to the game as well, then he's setting himself up for success. But there's no way. I mean, LeBron at this point can be passed first and still go up and get his. I don't think Anthony Davis can be that. He's got to set the tone from the jump, come out and be aggressive and get in that mid-post area and shoot a couple hook shots and post fadeaways over the defender. They're not going to be able to contest that in there. So I think he should look out come out the very beginning of the game looking to score and hunting his shot early on. Obviously, you know, not forcing it, not pressing, taking what the defense gives them, but making a point of emphasis in a game plan note by the Lakers that he's got to look for his shot and he's got to be their main scorer.
Right. So let's say within this series for a second, before we move on to the Nuggets and Suns, which will be the next one that we bounce to. I don't necessarily – we tend not to do this on the show per se. We don't – because talking about, like, historical greatness is really hard, especially for, you know, people our age as well, because, you know, we grew up, you know, from basically the 2000s on. So anything that happened before that, while we can have appreciation for, there's a different level of appreciation when you actually see it happening. So I don't want to necessarily talk about, you know, where we think, you know, because right now what we have are potentially the two greatest players of our generation. I say save, you know, Tim Duncan. We have LeBron James and Steph Curry against each other in one series. And as this matchup sort of, you know, came to fruition, one of the things that I started to thinking about was their historical places in terms of NBA history, especially after last season. I think Steph got a bump in a lot of people's minds winning the title that he did. And then that 50-point game 7 was also – that just kind of continued it. So, Josh, I'll start this question with you. I don't want to necessarily talk about how we think, again, Steph and LeBron compared to other players, but when 20, 30 years from now, when we're all in our 40s and 50s, and you look back on this era and you're talking to your kids or you're talking to young kids about this generation – is LeBron James, do you think he's going to come to mind first? Or do you think Steph Curry is going to come to mind first? And I'm not talking about necessarily, because if LeBron wins another ring, then that might change it. If Steph wins another ring, then that might change it. But if they were to both retire right now, and you have to name one person from this generation, I'm not saying who you think necessarily is better, but what name is going to come to mind first for you, LeBron or Steph?
I think, again, this may be something where it's personal preference.
It absolutely is.
And you're gonna tell your kids or the young players about maybe the player that you liked more. So perhaps there's inherent bias in this question, but
yes,
I really do think that the name that will be brought up, because it's kind of synonymous with changing the way basketball has been played, is Steph. I shared with you in the last podcast is that I think he's this generation's Jordan. Coach Kerr said that, and no better source for it to come from than a guy who literally won multiple championships with Jordan, saw the atmosphere that Jordan created, and the marketability that he had, the way that he changed the culture of sneakers. just like, there's so much that goes into it, more than just on the court, and then obviously Absolutely. What he was able to do on the court. But I think that would go to Steph just because of he's directly associated with the 3-point revolution. He looks like an average guy. I don't think we need to recap this whole thing over again, because like I said, similar to what I shared last time, but the way in which crowds react to him on the road, LeBron, I think he had that at a point of his career, but Steph kind of stole his thunder a little bit. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever admit it. And I think a lot of those matchups just happened to come down to Steph had the better team when they played in the finals a lot. I mean, I don't really know how much fault you could put on LeBron for losing those that he did to the Warriors, but I just think Steph is the guy that, because he changed the game and so many more people can relate to him just because of how he looks in terms of physical build. And I think he's the guy that will get mentioned. LeBron has done a lot. And I think LeBron will get mentioned in the line of how to keep your body right and how to play as long as you can. I think that LeBron will get remembered more in that line. Because when you hear people talk about LeBron now, the first thought, out of a lot of people's, first thought in a lot of people's minds and what's coming out a lot of people's mouths is that how is he still playing and playing at this level, right? Mm-hmm. So I think he's getting remembered more in that vein. Like, the whole conversation about him and Jordan is going to be whatever you prefer, 1A, 1B, whatever. Maybe people prefer the no losing in the finals or whatever. Like, that whole thing's going to be what it is, but he's going to get remembered as the guy who played forever and never slowed down. And Steph's going to be the guy who, gets remembered for change.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll get mentioned, but
put perhaps that first, just because of what he's been able to do with the game of basketball, changing it the way he has. And so I'd say him.
Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this really comes down to, if we were to look at prior generations, right? If you were to just go purely based off of accolades, names like Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem, Bill Russell, those sort of names come up, but the flashier pick has got to be Jordan. It might not have been for as long. He wasn't as dominant as Kareem was for as long of a chunk of time, but when he was at the top, he was there, and it was like nothing we'd ever seen before. I kind of think that sort of relationship is what's happening with Curry and LeBron, because Curry was this slow build, but then once he won that first MVP and once they won that first championship, he really hasn't been, kicked off the top of the mountain, really, in the NBA. He's been there. He's won 4 championships. It could win a 5th this year, and he's probably playing. Jason and I talked about this, I think, last podcast, but I think this is the best Steph Curry we've seen. And he is, what, 35, Josh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he can still go. I think, for me, if you were to look at accolades, the only answer that you could come to is LeBron. He's the highest scoring player in the NBA. More MVPs, more finals MVPs, just as many championships with 3 different franchises. But I think there's an element of LeBron fatigue that he's been doing this, and it's such a no-brainer of a conversation of like, well, yeah, obviously LeBron's the best player in the world. But now it's like people are tired of saying that, and obviously he's a lot older now. But I think if you were to look at the peak of what Curry has been able to do and is still doing, I think he'll probably have that lasting memory. And his game, like you said, Josh, is just a little more relatable, and I think a lot more in a social media time where the three is now that home run ball and that exciting play. His game just translates and is going to translate more to a lot of people.
Yeah. No, I'll respond to that quick point. I think you're right, is that the story arc of Steph's career mirrors that of Jordan's more, versus a LeBron can mirror more of like a Bill Russell, like the guy with all the accolades and everything, right? Made it to so many finals, all of this. But, you know, even if you look at the team, right? Everybody was talking about, would that 2016 Warriors that went 73-9, it was 17 when they added KD, you know, could they beat the Bulls, right? Like, it was all about, they were all both on these really dominant teams. And so there's a comparison in kind of the career and the story arcs. And then you had the point where MJ, like in the middle of his career, still in his prime, retires, kind of takes a year off. Well, Steph didn't retire, but if you remember in 2020, right, he goes down at the beginning of 2019-20 season, you know, breaks his hand. Then you got everything shuts down and they're kind of out of the picture. And then the next year he comes back, and remember MJ came back, he lost in the second round to Shaq Magic. Well, you know, Steph comes back, they lose in the play-in to Memphis, and people start to kind of, oh, you know, can they do it again? And then they would come out and win again. So I think there are a lot of similarities there that you kind of touched on a little bit in your piece there. And I think I think you're right. Those arcs, and then take with the off-court stuff too, and the impact they've been able to have on the culture. I think those two guys, though LeBron has been basically like chasing Jordan his whole career, made it very evident that that was his favorite player, and he tried to model parts of his game after him and obviously wore 23. It's kind of funny how Steph has become the guy that is kind of more closely associated in terms of a career and a story arc and a narrative with an MJ versus a LeBron. But yeah, I think that's just kind of how it's worked out. And people, I mean, we'll talk about both of them. Those are the all-time players of our generation for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just thought it was an interesting question. And I don't know if it would have come up had they not, I don't know if I would have thought of it had they not been matched up in the second round, but you know, everything around that series at the very beginning was LeBron, Steph. And then there was the legacy talk. And I was like, well, I mean, we have the legacy talk every year.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole idea, I thought the more interesting question would be for people our generation and talking about, you know, who do we think that we're going to look back at more and mention more to kids, you know, 10, 15 years from now and go, man, you wish you could have seen this person play. And I agree. I think I'm going to, same with you guys. I mean, I just echo everything that you guys said. I think I will initially, I think I'll mention Steph as just from the standpoint of he did more things where I had no explanation for. With LeBron, there are plenty of things where I can point out where I can explain to you how he does all of these things, because he's just that great of a basketball player. Like, he just does everything right. And yes, it helps when you're just a freak of nature. But Steph does more things, I think, on a daily basis where I just kind of go, you know, I really think there's only one person in the league or ever that could do what he's doing right now.
Right.
But you could honestly say the same thing about things that LeBron has done.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I do think that LeBron, unfortunately, kind of like he still kind of takes a hit from some people because they're like, well, it's almost like his longevity and his, you know, his build and physique, like somehow that he's been able to maintain that is like a strike against him for some reason. Like, well, you know, of course he's got all these records. He's still playing. He's played so many more games than all these other, look at how many more games he played than Michael Jordan. I'm like, how's that LeBron's fault? Like, he set himself up to be able to play that many games. But I think unfortunately, like that's almost become somewhat of a knock on him from a certain crowd. And like, I think it's a little bit of a shame. Because if a guy is bigger and faster and stronger and keeps his body in shape for way more years, how is that a fault?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's a thing that has become, something here.
Right. Just very, very cool that we get to, first of all, see these guys go up against each other. Who knows if we're going to see it again. they're both going to be playing next year, so I'm assuming they're both going to be in the playoffs. But whether or not they match up is totally different. So
we'll see Bronny James guarding Steph in a couple of years.
Just say, let's get ready for LeBron to go to Detroit. Okay.
Yeah, I know. All right, let's move our way to the next Western Conference series, and that's going to be the Nuggets and the Suns. I don't have a read on this one. the Nuggets blew out the Suns in game one. They beat them by 10 in game two. The Suns barely held them off in game three, and they barely held them off in game four. I mean, Josh, what do you have a read on this series? I mean, Devin Booker's been playing outstanding. Jokic has.
I got a read.
Oh, he's got a read.
Oh, man.
All right, go
Kevin
ahead.
Durant's a bad man, Sam.
Oh, my gosh.
I got a read.
Is he not the second best player on the
team? I think Devin Booker's been the bad man.
Yeah, I know. I said that just for Sam. But yeah. Durant is still obviously one of my favorite players in the league. It was cool. I got.
When he played
a horrible shooting night, it's like, man, what this is nothing that I'm used to here. But now these two guys, I follow this thread of a bunch of statistics, and there's great statistics in this thread. And Booker is most points per game on 60%+ field goal percentage in a single postseason. 60%+ field goal percentage for a 6'5", 6", whatever he is, shooting guard that's taking mostly jumpers is insane. I mean, mm-hmm. And he's averaging nearly 37 points a game. Durant, crazy. He's being overshadowed at just 30 points a game at nearly 50% from the floor, which is, it's crazy. But those two guys, that's exactly what they need. You put their averages together over the 9 games they've played this postseason, and they put them right around 67 points a game. And I think the magic number for them to have a chance in the series is they need to go for 70 to 80 points a game. They need to combine which is insane.
That's
both of them together. It's a very, very tall ask.
Here's the thing. When you have a guy on the – and I'll just read you this real quick. Jokic right now is averaging 36.5 points in this series, 14 rebounds, and 9.5 assists. You have somebody in this series who's just going berserk, and not to mention Jamal Murray's been playing great as well. Denver's deep, and that's why the Suns are not.
It's exactly why the ask is what it is. Yeah. So it's like, what is that? Like with great powers, great responsibility. Well, you got no Chris Paul. Right. So you're going to take away maybe 15 and 10 right there or a little bit more. And they're not as deep because they traded away much of that depth. Guys like a Cam Johnson and players like that for Durant. So they know what they're getting themselves into. And so the ask is that those guys have to go for that certain amount of points. And you see the games that they don't. They're on the road, albeit, but they lose those games. The games that they do, they win, despite Jokic having the 53 last night. So, I mean, and two, like, he's going to put up these crazy numbers. And again, I think he should get all the credit. It may not be talked about as much because he hits a couple of jumpers, a couple of threes here and there. But his points, let's just say the way he scores is less impressive. He's still scoring. There's, like I said, there's no knock on him. But we're going to talk about, like, the Bookers and the Durants more because they're hitting mostly jumpers and Booker shooting, like, he's missing 5 shots a game. I mean, that is that's incredibly tough. What he's doing. Denver is deeper. They don't have to. I mean, Jokic is going to get his triple double with 30 probably every game.
Yeah.
But they don't have to have another guy score a 30 or score a 20. But maybe if you're getting this type of production combined from a Booker and Durant on Phoenix, and then you get somebody to tack on, like last night, Landry Shamet, I think, had 19 off the bench. So if you get that extra contribution, then that's when you look at Denver and you say, okay, somebody else has to go for 30. Somebody else got to go for 20. And it's going to be Murray and possibly a Porter or KCP or some player like that. But they are the deeper team. Denver is the better team at this point. Let's keep in mind, too, like Durant's played – I don't even know if he's played 20 total games with Phoenix yet. The fact that they're able to do what they're able to do by just literally just going plug and play. Say what you want about Durant, like being able to lead his own team, whatnot. So, sure, there's going to be certain, overall historical categories that he's not placed in, conversations that he's not going to be mentioned in because, he hasn't done that to this point in his career. But that guy is the most malleable and, you know, impactful player that you can just stick on to any team, and it's like no chemistry issues.
Oh, yeah.
That is really rare to see that, honestly. Like, I know he was bashed for joining Golden State, but people are like, well, there's one ball. It was never an issue. Like, never an issue when he played there. Now you just take him, put him, you know, plug him in with like 10 games to go in Phoenix. There's like hard – you don't see the issues. There's only – I mean, the thing that I could recognize, a couple of possessions in that first round in the first two games of this series, where in crunch time they basically just put him as a decoy in the corner. And I'm like, you got to use him more than just a decoy in the corner in the clutch time. But they've been able to iron some of that out. And I think the coaching has a lot to do with it as well, because there's a connection there with Monty Williams. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league, and he was an assistant with OKC back in the day too. So there's a connection there. Those guys, obviously, they played on the USA team together. They won that 2020 Olympics. And Jason, to wrap this up here, my comment on this, you and I were talking about this right before the playoffs, like, are they going to be able to work through any chemistry things? And I was like, you know, of any guy that you could stick on this team, I think they'll be good. They know how to play ball. And I mean, hey, at the end of the day, great offense is going to beat a hand in the face every single time. There's literally a photo of Jeff Green with his entire hand over the eyes of Durant. He still pulled up, made the jumper. So if they keep shooting what they're doing, Booker is over 60%, mostly jumpers. Durant's right around 50%, also mostly jumpers. If they do that, they can win the series and they could advance very far. But, I mean, hey, they got a couple players that maybe they can go out and get this offseason. Maybe they can go get Sam's guy, Dylan Brooks, Morgan. I'm just kidding. But they got to add some depth. But, I mean, hey, they're working with what they got right now. It's taking Herculean efforts, but that's what's going to be necessary for them to win this year.
Sam, what's your thoughts on this series so far?
Hey, go Ducks, Dylan. I don't care, man. Keep your head up, King.
Hey, he wasn't like that at Oregon, was he?
No. What happened? He was not like that. He wasn't even like a defensive guy at Oregon. No, this series I think really comes down to Denver's got to be the favorite. I think when you're talking right, two guys have to go for 70 for Phoenix to have a chance at being in the game. I think so many things just have to go right for that team to win. And you're asking them to do that now in two more games. I think Denver's just in a way better situation, especially with the way that really Phoenix hasn't been able to guard the two-man game of Jamal Murray and Jokic, and you still have Aaron Gordon. You still kind of are waiting for Michael Porter Jr. to have one of those games where he just goes ballistic. It's those games are coming, and they have like a couple other guys that they can put in, Bruce Brown, Bones Highland on that team and stuff like that. It's like there's just so many things that Denver can do to get it done, to score enough points that I really think Phoenix is just too limited. And at a certain point, you got to think fatigue might be in play for KD. He hasn't played nearly as many games ramping up before the playoffs, and you're putting this amount of toll on him and his body. It's just who knows how long he can last if this series goes longer.
So quick question before we –
yeah, good.
Oh, go ahead, Josh.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, the injuries obviously have played a part with him. I mean, he rolled his ankle in the layup line this year. It's crazy.
I know.
But, you know, that also may be a blessing in disguise as well, because he comes in with a little bit less miles from the season on his body. So he can, you know, at least he's looked like he's been able to turn it on, keep the motor high. Kawhi tried that last playoffs, but I think he had a lingering injury there. But anyway, no, I mean – yeah, they just have to work with what they got. Those two guys, I mean, I've never really seen a team with just two guys. Like, if they do take Denver down, Denver has some serious questions to answer, because there really is no way they should lose with this complete of a roster as they had and all their guys healthy.
So, quick question before we move on to the Heat and Knicks, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but do we think that the winner of the Nuggets-Suns series is going to be the one to move on to the NBA Finals? Which is to be said, do we think that both of those teams are better than the Warriors and the Lakers?
You want me to go, Sam?
Yeah, you can go.
Well, my bracket's got the Suns in the finals, so I'm going with them.
Sam, what do you think?
No, I can't say that. I think the way the Lakers are playing, I'd give them. And it'd be really, I mean, disrespectful to just throw away the Warriors. I think the Warriors have a good shot against Phoenix. I think they'd match up really well against them. And what, the Warriors beat Denver last year, did they not?
Yeah, their team was dealing with a lot of injuries, but that would be to see Steph against KD. That's a win-win for me, man.
You think KD would just take his Phoenix jersey off and just switch over to the Golden State? No. You think they'd allow him to do that?
If he gets down 3-1.
I wonder what the networks would prefer. Would they prefer a KD LeBron series or a KD Steph series?
Anything. Just anyone but Denver. They're just crossing their fingers for anyone but Denver. There's honestly, like, you know, God bless Denver, man. But there's just no way to market that team. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know how you market, like, it's the best all-around team with this guy, slow-moving guy that scores 30. Yeah, you know, I don't know how they market that team.
Oh, man. Well, all right. So let's move on to the final series. That's going to be the Heat and the Knicks. The 8 and 5 seed going at it in round 2. I actually, truthfully, coming into this second round, just because of my disdain for both the Warriors and the Lakers, I was actually most excited about this series just because I felt like it was going to feel very different than any of the other series. I felt like it was going to feel a little more old school. You were going to have Jimmy Butler doing his thing, which has just been incredible to watch. The Knicks have been a really awesome surprise this postseason. And wow, how great for New York. I mean, I know the Kings have been the laughingstock of the NBA for a long time, but you know, the Knicks have not been that great either. And that's such a great basketball city. And for them to be doing this well has been really fun to see for the fans. So we have the Heat Knicks right now. It's 2-1 with the Heat taking the most recent game, 105-86. All right, Sam, I'll start with you on this one. What are your thoughts about this series? Jimmy Butler's been averaging 26, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists per game. And meanwhile, on the other side, Jalen Brunson has been going for 25, 5, and 5. It's been a kind of a lower scoring series. I mean, the Heat have been averaging 106, and the Knicks have only been averaging 99 points a game. What is kind of your thoughts about this sort of throwback series a little bit?
Two really, really good defensive coaches in Thibodeau and Spoelstra. How many times have they gone back and forth in the playoffs between those Chicago teams and those early Miami teams, and now this iteration of the New York Knicks? I think it really comes down to health in this series. You really haven't seen Julius Randle with a major. He really hasn't come to form like what he was in the regular season. I think that would be huge for the Knicks. And the big question mark for Miami is, can Jimmy continue to do this? Is his body going to give up on him? If he is continuing to be healthy and he's able to will the ball into the basket each and every possession, because that's really what it is. I mean, it's not pretty. It's just him against a double team putting the ball in the basket. It doesn't make any sense. I think that's the biggest question mark for them. I'd love to see Miami move on. I think that would be either them against Boston or Jimmy Butler against Philly would be incredible for the NBA. And you know what? The Knicks being in the Eastern Conference Finals, I think, would be huge for them, as well as they're the biggest market in the NBA. But really, I think to continue this story, Miami, I think, is the upper hand.
Yep. Yeah, do you guys want my Stephen A. rant really quick here?
Sure, yeah.
First of all, I don't know what the heck's going on with my New York Knicks. Secondly, you know, that game 3 on Saturday, you know, there's about a quarter and a half where they were playing the English and the Spanish at the same time. I'm like, what the heck's going on here? I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but literally the live broadcast, like somebody in the truck's getting fired. Anyway, they were playing. I was like, what? I'm like, they go down to Miami and they got the Spanish going. Oh, yeah, okay, all right. Yeah. I'm all for it. But anyway, you know, hey, Jimmy, right? Not to be overshadowed him, and him and Booker have been the best players the entire playoffs.
Yeah.
What he was able to do in that first round. I mean, hey, those last two games that they won, Giannis was out there playing pretty well besides missing his free throws that game five. I mean, the Bucks had a fourth quarter lead in both of those games, double digit fourth quarter lead, I believe. And he made it vanish pretty much all by himself. So he deserves all the credit. What's interesting is that I thought I looked at all the series this year going into the playoffs. And I was like, you know what? That New York and Cleveland, that's going to be a great first round series.
Yep, I said the same thing too.
Goes five, right? It's like totally boring. Like, you know, Cleveland is held below 80 points in like one of the games. Wow, what just a bummer. And then this series too, it's like, well, this is going to be scrappy. This is the one series that I think at this point is not going seven. I could see all the rest of the series going seven games, and this one will probably
before then. Because I think Miami's better
overall. I mean, we talked about injuries, but Miami's dealing with a lot of injuries too. I mean, they still don't mm-hmm. have Hero, who had that hand injury in the first round, and then they lost Oladipo. I think, a knee. And they mm-hmm. got guys like – I don't know how they're doing it. They got guys dropping like flies on that team, and they got these G leaguers. This Gabe Vincent was playing for the Stockton Kings, and now he's making every single shot. This team, they got Kevin Love. He's like the resurgence of Kevin Love. It's just so weird. Like, I think the NBA honestly should be looking at this playoffs. It's like, great, they're going to get the ratings. You know, they got all the star matchups, but they should also go, man, we kind of got a problem on our hands here because we got an 8 seed and then we got a 7 seed and a 6 seed. And the regular season didn't matter at all to any of these teams because they're just running through. So, you know, I guess Golden State didn't run through, but I'll say Miami's what they did to Milwaukee was a run through.
They blew them. They destroyed Milwaukee.
And Milwaukee the injury had a lot to do with it. Maybe it just took the wind out of their sails because at one point this year they won like 17 or 18 straight games, and it was like they could go to the finals again. But Miami just ran through them, and it wasn't even Miami entered the postseason with momentum. They lost a play-in game for crying out, like they lost the Hawks in a play-in game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are like one of the most unpredictable teams, but it's also what happens apparently when like March Madness morphs into professional basketball because they have one of the hottest stretches going where they're just playing just excellent basketball led by this guy who's posting otherworldly numbers. Nobody can stop him, and he's talking trash at the same time. So I think it's great to see like – the historic performances out of Jimmy. Once again, we're going to all talk about how he's Michael Jordan's son practically out there. Who knows when it comes to that, but man, like talk about what he's done to a couple of teams. Milwaukee, known for their defense. Jrue Holiday, known for being the best guard defender in the NBA, just cooked him. Nothing but respect for Jrue Holiday, but man, he just did whatever he wanted to him in that series.
Yeah.
Now New York, you know, held Cleveland to a lot of low scores in that first round, and it's not seeming to matter so far. So unless something can flip, the reason why I can say it confidently like this, I mean, hey, if New York comes back and win the series, I'll take the egg on my face. But the game two that New York won without Jimmy Butler on the floor for Miami, they had to play so hard to win that game, and they had to have a lot of breaks go their way, and Miami finally stopped hitting their shots. So the fact that they had to battle that hard to win when there wasn't even Butler playing and Miami was already up 1-0, it's not like they had to win that game. It was not a good sign going forward. I think they could definitely be down 3-1 at the end of the night. And who knows, if Miami could just repeat last round and close it out in five. But again, you know, a lot of people forget they were the 1 seed last year and they were one shot away from going to the finals when Jimmy pulled up for that 3.
Yes.
Just missed it just a hair short. So, besides the addition of Kevin Love, it's arguably, I think it's like the same team from last year.
I was going to say, I think the addition of Kevin Love has helped them a lot in this playoffs. There you go.
It's helped him. He's throwing passes. He's looking over at Aaron Rodgers. I mean,
he's taking a lot of charges. He's making shots. He's just doing all the right things. He's just being a really solid vet.
Yes, but you know, at the end of the day, like, hey, this is what happens when everything kind of goes your way. Like, all their guys are making their shots. They've got
undrafted or late round picks.
And it's really a cool story. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of huge names to market, I guess, in that series, unless you're looking at Jimmy. But I mean, the type of performances that he's putting on, I don't know who wouldn't want to watch that. So that could be a really good conference finals, should they get there, whoever they play.
Can you imagine if we saw the 8th seed Heat and the 7th seed Lakers in the finals? I don't think that's absolutely unrealistic.
No, it's not.
Man, what a turn of events that would be, as opposed to like the Celtics playing the Nuggets.
Ugh.
Because honestly, wouldn't truthfully like a Heat Lakers finals, isn't that more interesting than a Celtics Nuggets finals?
Anything without the Nuggets, I'm sorry. I'm just not into it, man.
Oh man. All right. Well, I know we're on
Denver fans.
I know we're on a bit of a time crunch. Sam, I know you got to get going. So, Josh, again, thanks for coming on, man. It's always fun to talk about the NBA with you, and we'll have to do this again once the playoffs are finally over and we finally have our NBA champion, whoever that is.
Once Durant's got his third championship, Sam.
I was about to ask.
Yeah,
Josh.
I was going to say, what is your final? Yeah.
Oh man, I mean, I can just basically blow up my bracket that I picked beforehand. But I did in that bracket, I did have the Suns going against the Celtics in the finals. And the Suns were taking it 4-2. That's what I had at this point. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have nothing against Denver. I just think for entertainment purposes, I'd take anybody in there to win over them. At this point, I have no reason to change my pick, so I'll just keep it as it is. Suns and Celtics. Man, there's points that I could be like, you know, this is the year that Boston should take it, but then they go off and do what they do. They mess around. They don't, I don't know what they do. I'm not sure. It's just a very confusing team at times. But anyway, I'll just,
I like it. Honestly, I like Durant. I think Booker
is the face of the league. Like they really have hyped up John Morant to be that. I just don't think so. I think Devin Booker is the next face of the NBA. Oh yeah. I think he should be considered, as if not the face, one of the next faces of the league, along with Giannis as we go forward here. I think his combination.
Yep.
And Fox too. And Fox. Yeah. I'm sorry. I still forget about Sacramento at times, but yes, Fox is in there. And I think, honestly, both of those guys, if you look at really quick, I'll make a note here. If you look at the game of Fox and Booker, like those guys both do a good job of combining some of the old and new school game, right? Like neither of them are the most athletic guard. I mean, Fox is more athletic than Booker. Let's say that. And, you know, you could make a case like John Morant's the most athletic guard. But what they're able to do is that they're able to take advantage of the mid-range game. I mean, Fox scored so many points on that turnaround shot in the key this year. So they're able to do that and stretch the floor. And so those are the guys that the league's got to be looking to really, you know, put the money behind in the future in terms of marketing and getting those guys in front of as many fans as possible, because they're very fun to watch.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, Josh, we really appreciate having you on. I know Sam had to go, but we really appreciate having you on. We'll have to do this again once the champs are eventually crowned, and then we can talk about the finals and then maybe what to look forward to next season. So, again, thanks for coming on, man.
All right, man. Sounds good. Watch out. Udonis has a little 40 piece coming your way.
I know. Maybe at this point, everything's going their way. So we'll see.
I'm a bucket.
I know. I know him and Kevin Love out there on the floor at the same time.
The historical unit.
Can you imagine a finals with the Heat and the Nuggets, and then you have Jokic, Kevin Love, and Haslam out on there on the floor at the same time? What a slow moving game that would be.
I'm pressing the turbo all the way. This is as fast as they run.
I know. Honestly, you'd have to watch that game in like 2x speed, just like record it and then just leave it on fast forward the entire time. Yeah. Oh man! All right, man. Dude. All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. See ya.